All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Tuesday, September 27th. I am Doug Norris.
James Davis.
You did it, buddy. I was wondering I was wondering if you were going to try to throw. I actually thought about that ahead of time. I was like, I wonder if he's going to try to.
You were not wondering anything. You're still, I'm so full of it.
We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. If you want to head over and check out our NFL projections, we're coming off a really strong week. Swept every single slate on FanDuel, early and evening slates on DraftKings. So really feeling good about the projection system. There's still time for you to grab it for this NFL season. It's $29.95 a month. That will cover you for MLB, NFL, NHL and NBA when they're all sort of rolling together. I think there's not as much overlap with NBA and MLB, but our subscription covers every single sport that we have projections for, and it allows you to calculate optimal lineups powered by Lineup Lab, and that will help you calculate those for NBA, NFL, and MLB. You are all set, $29.95 a month. Buddy, week three is in the books. Yeah. There is a ton to talk about. We're going to try to focus a little bit more today on things that we learned, because later in the week on Thursday and Friday, we will get to our picks for this upcoming week and get to a full game-by-game breakdown, which people have really been enjoying. I want to pat myself on the back for that one. It's mostly because of me. But let's start off with some things that we can glean from this week. And I'll start actually last night, because it's fresh in our memory, with the Saints and Falcons game. What was the first thing that stood out to you watching that game last night? I feel like we're going to be on the same page, because this is something we talked about last week.
Well, it was how smart we are. Was the first thing that came up. No, listen, we made some bad calls as well. But one thing I think it's safe to say, were we the lowest on Julio Jones out of any outfit
we
for season long or daily? For
we
this
had
week?
To have been. Yeah, I think. I mean, I didn't look at it. I'm not sure if like that sort of shifted. I think it shifted. Well, okay, so it's a little hard to judge on him because he was not on the main slates of games, so therefore ownership percentages are going to get a little wacky. Like it would be more telling if they had just been on, if they had just played that game Sunday night instead of Monday. So it's a little hard to tell.
We wouldn't have played him on Sunday. A lot of people would have,
yes.
But given that it was the Sunday into Monday, I'm sure he wound up in some of our things just because he's...
Yeah, right. He ended up being in like those things because he was just like a raw points guy and you could just figure it out. Although it was close. And so anyway, we were really low on Jones going in, low relative to his price. Like we still think he's a great receiver or whatever. But just for us, it was a total and complete fade to stay away from him because... Well, give the reasons why. We can like sum up...
Sure. I think that basically when guys get into that high 8,000s or low 9,000s on FanDuel, the reason for that is principally because their team decides that they have no other options, right? Mm-hmm. That they're going to look at that guy for the first and second read, that he's going to be locked in for not just 10 targets a game, usually like 12 or 13 or 14 targets a game. And what we found is that there are very few receivers throughout history, frankly, that will garner that kind of attention. And Julio Jones was that guy last year when the Falcons didn't really have a lot of other options. But going into this year, you know, especially I think for us, it really crystallized seeing how they used Sanu and Tammy in the first 2 weeks because, you know, Matt Ryan already spreads the ball around a decent amount. He did that again last night. But seeing him focus in and, like, for instance, target Tammy more than Jones in the first 2 weeks at least put my antenna up, right? Because in a situation like that, like, that'll just never happen. Like, there won't be a game where Jesse James gets more targets than Antonio Brown, right? Like, that's just not going to happen this season. So, given that that happened, I think we still like Jones from an upside perspective, and I think he was still a solid upside play last night. But combine that with, like, you know, some of the ticky-tacky injury stuff, and it just wasn't the place to spend to allocate your highest number of dollars this week for us.
Yeah, it could be like we said, it's hard to totally know all the reasons. There could be some injury stuff. He has been playing.
It looks like it.
Right. Like he did. I mean, I don't evaluate things that I see. Like, I don't evaluate game film, so I don't ever try to pretend to see if I think a guy's hurt. Like, I'm not, you know, analyzing each one of his routes or whatever. And people that do that, I mean, there's only a very few class of people that do that, so I wouldn't believe all the time you hear other people mention that they do that kind of thing. But,
well, I bet. I imagine people probably watch the game more than once, but it's like, you know, if I watch a Chinese film, like I can watch it as many times as I want. I'm not going to understand it anymore the fifth time than I did the first time.
Sure.
You know?
So anyway, there's just major concerns with him. Like you said, it really crystallizes last night for sure, because now it's really in everyone's public consciousness as he was a chalk play, at least for those other slates. He's a big profile name, you know, top five if you're season long, even season long stuff. So, and people just got epically burned by him last night. And it just doesn't seem to me like it's going to change. Like, now Sanu got hurt a little bit last night, so who knows, right? Like, Sanu, if he were to not play next game, And they are just down another wide receiver, though Justin Hardy kind of got some looks last night. So it's not totally clear to me that Jones is ever going to come back into that huge target per game guy. And really, there aren't that many of those guys left. Like, there are some. We'll get to them this week when we talk about the pick. So we don't need to go into total crazy target territory here. But there's just not a ton of guys that are getting those that are locks for the 12 to 13 or more targets per game at this point.
No, there really aren't. And a lot of those guys are like, you know, not really doing much with them anyway. So, I don't know if I'm out on Jones, but certainly for me, he's going to have to prove something probably before I'll even bother, like unless all the other big name guys are on buys. Really interesting, I think, too, from last night's game. So the Falcons put up 45 points and give 34 touches to their running backs.
Yeah.
You know, they're both out of price range for me going into next week. Again, I think they'll be overowned because, I mean, Freeman in particular, like a wildly unsustainable 11 yards per carry. Probably can't do that all season.
He looked great,
and 11 yards per reception as well. So I probably won't play either of those guys, even though their prices weren't taking into account last night. But I did think that was interesting to note, and that only further depresses the value of that receiving core there.
It's so funny, too, because you're like always, it was one of those things like, did they look great? Or is the Saints defense just this bad? And I think it's probably more of the latter.
Yeah.
You know, they play San Diego this week. I think San Diego will be popular plays, though, you know, something that we were looking into early on for a team like San Diego is at some point you just lose enough players that it kind of doesn't matter who you play. Like, so they played Indianapolis mm-hmm. last week. And, you know, maybe probably underperformed all things considered where some people thought they would be in terms of like their overall output. So it'll be interesting to see, I think, like can San Diego sort of replicate some of the success that the Falcons had last night. I think it's conceivable considering their prices and, you know, their value, but I don't know, the Saints, speaking to that Devontae Freeman thing was the Saints defense is just atrocious.
Yeah, actually, I'm pretty high on the Chargers going into this week. I think that, like, if you really break down what happened in the Colts game, I mean, Phil Rivers, you know, completes 66% of his passes for 330 yards. You know, that for them, what killed them here was the running game kept sputtering out on them, and it was a lot of, you know, medium length drives without converting it into touchdowns. You know, they had how many field goals? Did they have 3, 4, 5 field goals on the day? So, you know, and that might be a problem for them. You know, when the field gets shorter, they don't have Keenan Allen, they don't have Gates, you know, to haul in those receptions in traffic on a short field. So, but still, I mean, Rivers connected on 5 of 5 to Hunter Henry, 6 of 9 to Tyrell Williams, you know, 4 of 7 to Benjamin. So I think that I think there's going to definitely be value on the San Diego side of the ball this week. I'm not sure exactly where to get it. I wouldn't mind rolling Melvin Gordon out there again, even though he was kind of a letdown, at least on the running side of the ball. So, I'm higher on that than I suspect some people will be.
Some other pieces of news that come out of this week, and not even that so much news, but just revelations. One is that obviously the big talk is right now the Eagles. The Eagles play Pittsburgh. They are slight dogs going into the game, and I thought even that line looked a little hinky because I was like, man, people are just putting a lot of faith in the Eagles based on having played two pretty bad teams to start the year, and whoopsie daisies, because they just routed the Steelers last week, 34-3.
Yeah,
that was probably one of the biggest upsets you'll see, just in terms of maybe just expectation going in. And are the Eagles like just? I mean, this is a big like sort of like, I don't know, ESPN talk show, but like, are the Eagles for real, James?
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to say, right? I mean, because even in any given week, anything can happen, and I still think there are strength of schedule concerns for them, like overall in terms of like evaluating them against other 3-0 teams, for instance. But I think it's very interesting because unlike other sports, I mean, coaches make a huge difference in terms of the overall football team success. Mm-hmm. You know, football, I think, is rightfully compared to chess in the way that, you know, it's chess where like some teams have more queens on their team than others. Like, you know, you can have different quality of your pieces, but how you deploy your pieces really, really does matter. And it's pretty clear that they're just deploying them in a totally different way this year, both from their pace of play, how they're breaking down their run versus pass distribution, how they're utilizing Wentz. And Wentz is an interesting piece in and of himself, frankly, too. So, you know, it could just be that their defense was run ragged last season, you know, having to keep up with the breakneck pace. And this is the pace they were meant to play all along, and they're just going to be good. So I think certainly we want to throw out last year's stats on the Eagles. That I've at least seen enough to think that. And I think we're going to continue to try and evaluate and acknowledge a small sample size issue here. But yeah, this is a new era. I mean, Wentz was also fantastic, right? I mean, what more does the guy need to do than throw for 300 yards on 74% completion with no interceptions?
Like, right. And against a defense that had success against guys like AJ Green and Dalton the week before. So it's not like the Steelers are any kind of just pushover. And they kind of like shut Cousins down too. So it's not like the Steelers, they weren't looking at the strength of schedule thing. They had been pretty good. The couple of interesting things from that game. Well, first of all, you know, speaking about like just this year's stats, Philadelphia was ranked second overall in DVOA, defensive DVOA going into the game. And so they just might be first now once that updates. And so Seattle is pretty good too, but those two teams right now are just sort of the top of the mountain, maybe along with the Vikings as well, in terms of just overall defense. And when you shut a team like the Steelers down that have like legit weapons, that is just, now it's a real thing for me. So it's just going to be hard. I can't imagine a scenario going forward where I'm going to want to play too many guys against the Eagles, I don't think. I mean, unless something totally completely changes. The pace is way down. Sure. The defense looks good. Another interesting thing that
they're on a bye this week, so we don't have to worry about it for this week.
So. One thing I will mention though, I know they're on a bye, so we probably don't need to spend tons of time here, but all of a sudden, out of kind of nowhere, Wendell Smallwood gets 17 carries for the Eagles last night.
Sure, out of West Virginia.
Hey, buddy, I actually knew that.
Fifth round pick. Yeah,
absolutely. So he gets 17 carries. Ryan Matthews just disappears. I mean, basically Sproles disappears, and all of a sudden Smallwood is the guy. Is this something that we are going to, when the Eagles come back, adjust? He had been one attempt, two attempts, 17 attempts. And I actually don't think there was an injury in here. I think it was just, they just went, he looked good and they just kept him in. Is this something that becomes a committee now? Is Smallwood kind of going to be the guy for the Eagles now? What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me with Matthews now, like, because a similar thing sort of happened to him in San Diego as well. You just wonder at some point if teams are like, man, this guy was a high round pick, but he just kind of stinks, you know? And Smallwood was so good on a yards per touch basis last night that it wouldn't shock me to see him go out and get another set of touches in the next week. I mean, it's always a little weird, right, when games get out of hand and how touches are distributed. And you don't want to draw too many conclusions from that. But, you know, on the receiving side of the ball, things were not so out of the ordinary. I mean, we didn't see a lot of Matthews, but I'm definitely intrigued, and I'll follow the news and notes on that. And it's interesting too, because if we were going into this week, we would probably still get last week's price on Smallwood. I'm not sure that'll be the case going into week four. So yeah, week five? What's next week? Week four.
This is week four, week five, yeah.
Yeah, going into week five when they're back. I don't think we'll get quite as good a value, but I'll be keeping my eyes open.
Another piece of injury news that we actually probably can use for this week, Jeremy Langford is going to be out 4 to 6 weeks for the Bears now. Jordan Howard came in and got pretty much all of his touches last game against the Cowboys. Now, the Bears lost by 14, so they and the Bears are bad, right? So, but
they seem real bad.
But now Howard is pretty much left alone in the backfield. I don't believe they have any other running backs they can really deploy. The interesting thing about him is, so 9 carries for 45 yards, 5 yards a carry. Okay, fine. You know, who knows if that's actually the truth or not. But also 6 targets out of the backfield. And if he's going to be the every down guy for the Bears, even a bad Bears team. So he was, you know, even when they got killed, he still got 13 touches for almost 100 yards. Is Howard a value play this week going in against a Lions team who probably is, you know, all things considered, worse on defense than the Cowboys?
Well, I think to analyze that, I mean, we can use Langford's stats going into this game as a reasonable proxy for what we can expect from Howard. Now, Langford, before this game started, had 28 carries and 85 yards in 2 games. So that seems pretty bad. I don't know that, you know, getting 14 carries at essentially 3 yards per carry. Now, maybe part of that was a Langford problem. Maybe he was, you know, playing through the sprained ankle thing the whole time, and we won't know for sure. But the Bears just are quite terrible at running the ball. Right. So I don't know why, you know, Jordan Howard is going to be any kind of big revelation. I talked about this last week, but it's really hard to evaluate yards per carry for guys like him in many cases because teams are not expecting them to hand the ball to him when he's out there. So that surprise element, you know, oftentimes they're down by quite a bit. Like in this game, maybe they, you know, Dallas is just taking away the pass. So going into this game with Detroit, I'd be pretty nervous about deploying him even at really, really low prices. Now, that's not to say that we might just not wind up doing it based on a price basis, but we've seen many cases in the past where, you know, guys pick up the majority of a timeshare in a bad situation, even on a low price, and kind of underperform. So I'm not totally sure yet, I guess. Might wind up playing him, but we won't feel great about it, would be my guess.
Yeah, right now, I mean, this is 9:30 a.m. on Tuesday, so much changes really through the day. Right now, he is actually showing up in optimal lineups for us.
Yeah, and that doesn't shock me.
And it's because of the price, right? Like 3,700 on DraftKings. 3,700 on DraftKings for a guy that will receive the ball out of the backfield, to me, actually does feel pretty safe. Like, because if they're going to, you know, they had him in the game when they were losing big last game, so that's like not so much of a game script issue for me as it would be if he was just like a two down back, and he was just not going to be in there. So I'm not as worried about it. But
yeah, that's a good observation. I mean, they are missing Kadeem Carey too. So right. I think that the four receptions are probably telling a bigger part of the story than whatever we picture as the carries. That's a good call.
Another injury piece that comes out this week is Shane Vereen is going to be out. Rashad Jennings was already sort of hurt. And now we're left with Orleans Darkwa and maybe Rashad Jennings. What do you think about the Giants running game right now? Is it just totally dusted and disgusted and we just can move on from it because we just don't know and they all stink?
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about this Monday night game, so we'll get an opportunity to, you know, take the temperature of the situation a little bit more than we would for other teams, you know, at least on DraftKings where we can do late swap. You know, the Giants have really just kind of struggled running the ball all season. You know, Vereen was sort of the exception to that rule. And with Vereen being out, you know, plugging Darkwa into the Rashad Jennings 2.0 role, I'm not over the moon about this, but I'll just need more information. My suspicion is that I don't know that they really want to use Darkwa out of the backfield catching the ball, and that seems to be the only really successful thing the Giants are doing offensively right now. So, right. Color me skeptical. It's weird because I'm not normally skeptical of these backup running back types, but yeah, on Darkwa, I just want to hear that he's going to be the every down back.
Yeah, that's where the skepticism.
He only got one target all last week, and I'm nervous about that.
The skepticism for me is the same as you. It's not so much like whatever talent level. It's just like what are teams going to do? Like you just don't know. The running back committee thing is just such a prevalent thing in the NFL now that you just simply cannot trust. Even if a team says, you know, sometimes you get it. Like so, you get Christian Michael going into last week, and he was great, and our system loved him, and we probably were even a little too gun shy on him, all things considered, when it really came down to it. But he goes in there, and there's just no one really competing against him, so you can feel okay. It's really just the problem of if there's just any other guy like on the roster that the team has mentioned at all. And next thing,
well, the Giants have Bobby Rainey. He caught a ball out of the backfield last week. There are other guys on the Giants, you know. They don't need to use Jennings and Vereen exclusively. So, and the Giants are also just getting thin, right? So they may be less likely to just stick a guy in there and give him 25 carries. Don't mind it. Again, I think it's a little too early in the week to evaluate both this situation and the Howard situation. Like I know the Bears, for instance, are trying to add running back depth. It wouldn't surprise me if the Giants did the same thing. Both should be on everyone's radar, though.
Another game that I found interesting from like a fantasy perspective as compared to maybe a real life perspective, and it was a guy that we actually talked about a decent amount going into last week, was Aaron Rodgers. So Rodgers goes into the game, and they really just run a train on Detroit early. Detroit ends up coming back a little bit late as they start passing more. So Rodgers ends with four touchdown passes, which you're like, so his final fantasy stat line looks really good, right? Except that he only throws 24 total passes, 15 for 24, so still in that sort of low 60% completion range, which is a down from, you know, when he was at peak Aaron Rodgers, and only for 205 yards. So I'm wondering if the four touchdowns clouds people's vision of like what that game actually was for Rodgers, if that makes sense, like what I'm asking. Like, which is the real one? Because 15 for 24 for 205 yards is a bad game, but four touchdowns is a great game. So which one is the real Rodgers going in here?
I mean, that's a really great question, because on one hand, you know, people are going to look at the total fantasy points and feel pleased with it. And Detroit really did manage the clock quite well in this game. The Packers simply ran very few plays overall. Right. Like they only ran, what was it here, 48 plays from scrimmage. Like that's insane. you know, and a lot of that was because they were up by so much. So I think that we'll take this. I think I take this as a positive sign, I guess, for both Aaron Rodgers' stock and I think perhaps more importantly, Jordy Nelson's stock. Nelson, you know, tops 100 yards, gets in the end zone. I think that he'll be a higher owned guy going forward. And yeah, I feel a lot better about them. Now, again, I think they're on bye this week too, right?
Yeah,
so
they are.
I think we can kind of wait and see, but I'm pleased by this. I think that still the pass to run distribution was in Rodgers' favor, although not quite as much as maybe normally. But again, they were up by so much, and just, you know, both teams kind of managing the clock for different reasons. Detroit possibly unintentionally.
Well, they just couldn't run the ball at all. Like, they,
10 carries for 9 yards for Theo Riddick.
Well, at one point he was like 7 carries from minus 10 yards, I think. Like, he was really able to crack off an 8 yard run to get him back to get him
exactly.
back above the
puzzle. So both teams, you know, again, Detroit, probably due to poor coaching, seemed to be wanting to end the game, and Green Bay just had every reason just to keep handing the ball off and getting this game over with. So yeah, I take it pretty much as only a positive thing.
Sort of in the same vein, Marvin Jones, well, it's in the same vein in terms of like stat line as opposed to like reality. Marvin Jones, he catches 205 for 2 touchdowns, and he's by far the play of the day. That might be the best receiving game all season, honestly.
I think it is, yeah.
And well, going forward too, but again, only 8 targets for him. So people will look at Marvin Jones. And maybe this is like sort of in that Stephon Diggs territory where it's like you have a huge game, but kind of every single thing went right. And 8 targets when Matthew Stafford threw 41 passes is just not that many. And so like it's not into that wide receiver one territory, into like the elite level for sure. What are your thoughts on Marvin Jones after that game?
Well, I think that – so with Marvin Jones, you know, I don't want to look at just the one game as his body of work. I think it's definitely worthwhile to look at the previous games too. And on the season now, he's up to 18 catches on 29 targets, mm-hmm. and 29 targets over 3 games is elite. You know, he's on pace for about 160 targets over the course of the season. And if he's going to get targets like that, he'll probably justify his prices going forward. Now, I think that he might wind up being overowned in some weeks, although I don't think this week is one of them. I mean, he's just 7,600 on FanDuel, a nice matchup with Chicago. So you would always rather see him get a greater Lions share of the team's targets.
Well, good one, buddy.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
But no, I think that, you know, given what he did with his targets when it was thrown his way, and, you know, he's now frankly just showing that this might be who he is for this season. Like, he's averaging just a ton of yards per catch. The Lions are definitely using him in that downfield role in a way that, you know, he was never quite utilized in Cincinnati since they had AJ Green. I really, really like Jones going forward. Certainly from a season-long perspective. I know we're not a season-long podcast, but at 7,600, that's a competitive price on him for me.
Another interesting sort of like end of game stat line, which is really interesting. This is a guy that's going to be sort of tough to evaluate going forward, just because they use him in different roles, is Terrell Pryor. So yeah. Pryor, the Browns are a total mess in terms of just their personnel at this point. But Pryor comes out last game, 14 targets.
Okay.
Eight, which you love that. Also throws 5 passes,
right?
And rushes 4 times and gets in the end zone.
Okay.
Right. So the Browns are in like all hands on deck mode in terms of like who they need to just get out like a full functioning team onto the field and to be able to play. He goes into this week with, I don't know, what do we make of him? He plays the Redskins. They're already underdogs. They stink. But if they're just going to be using him sort of like at every position, right. Like, what is Terrell Pryor like a safe play at this
He's
point?
He's kind of like the best player on their high school team. They put him out there at, you know, defensive end as well.
Yeah, you're like, you know what? You really can't throw, but you're the quarterback too, buddy. So just because like you're so much better than everyone else. So just give it the old college
just
or high school try.
Athleticism, we feel you can do as good as Cody Kessler. So yeah, I mean, it's one of the harder situations to evaluate that we've ever seen, I think. I mean, to get 5 attempts, 4 carries, and what did you say, 13 targets or
14,
whatever?
14 targets.
14 targets,
yeah.
Ridiculous. I didn't even look at that because I just was so blown away by the stat line. I famously was asked specifically in our chat going in the hour into this game what I thought about Terrell Pryor, given that he might see limited snaps at quarterback. And you know what, Doug? I said I wouldn't bother.
Oops.
And I stand by that stand by last week. But I think going forward, yeah, I mean, just on the raw target volume alone, they picture him as the whole offense, it sure seems like. And whenever you get a guy in that role, I mean, we talked about this with Julio Jones, DeAndre Hopkins last year, and we've talked about how quickly that can change when other options become available. Now, maybe that happens when Josh Gordon gets back, but it sure seems like, I mean, Pryor was also successful, right? So it's not like in the if it ain't broke, don't fix it category. They actually took a team to overtime. I think they're probably feeling really great about that. Good moral victory. So right. I think he'll be very, very prominently featured.
Well, he's
forward.
An interesting price consideration here, right?
Yeah.
So on DraftKings, right, on DraftKings, he's 43. I think that he's probably the highest owned cash game play, I suspect, going in, just because that game is on people's radars. He has so many ways to score points now that the floor.
That price on just receptions.
That's what I mean. So the floor.
He gets no yards on them.
Exactly. So he's 4,300 now in FanDuel. I mean, just in a total reversal of what usually is the case, he's 7,000, which is in that like Marvin. That's what, like, where Marvin Jones was last week, right?
We can get some comps for that going into this week. So that's around Jeremy Maclin, Emmanuel Sanders, Julian Edelman, DeSean Jackson. Like, I like him better than all those names.
Yeah, he's just an interesting guy. I think I could swing playing him on both sites in cash. I think he's just a high floor guy. Now, we should do like a segment about like rage induced performances, like things that tilt me to, like, pretty damn hard. Doug Baldwin was a guy our system was like so high on the first 2 weeks, and we were really contrarian with that. And he, you know, first week, not too bad, 9 for 92 and a touchdown. And then,
I mean, that's great.
No, that's great. And then high on him again and into the next week, 3 for 20 for nothing. And so we kind of downgrade the targets a little bit because we're a little bit worried about his production going forward. And then he goes 8 for 164 and a touchdown in like probably only Marvin Jones, you know, or I guess Jordy Nelson had a pretty big game too. But is Baldwin back to... Did he really never leave this thing, and maybe it was an injury thing? Do we consider him in that upper echelon of wide receivers, and especially in terms of like red zone usage and just overall targets?
I guess it depends what you mean by upper echelon. I mean, he's not anywhere near like the Antonio Brown class of wide receiver for sure. Will he continue to be a good value in the mid 7,000s? Absolutely. And that's where our system has liked him all season long. Again, Seattle is one of the strangest teams so far this year. I mean, they lost 3-9. Against the Rams, they scored 3 points.
Did you say the lower score first? That's like what people that don't watch sports do.
I was reading the game log, dude.
Oh, that's embarrassing. I'm not gonna take that out, but because it's just so
it's a little indefensible.
I'll tell you right now. If I had done it, I'd take it out. But since you did it, I'm gonna leave it in. 3-9. That's like what my wife says when she says a score. God, it's so embarrassing. All right. Anyway, what were you saying? I'm like totally lost focus. I don't even know what you were talking about.
What am I talking about? Yeah. Oh, well, I was talking about how they lost by the score of 3-9 in an International Football League contest against the Los Angeles Rams. And what it reminds me of is our friend or the guy we know from overseas who always posts on Facebook. And hopefully this won't be offensive, but I think this is a worthwhile segue. I think you know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yeah, I know.
I'm wishing the best of luck to the Denver Broncos in the National Football League of the United States in their big matchup against the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl or whatever.
Hey, Nick, buddy, Nick, if you're listening, buddy, with nothing but love, still love, if you're rolling the DFS train. All right, anyway, so the Baldwin thing.
Yes, Doug Baldwin. So Seattle being so horrible against the Rams, a team that was also just completely destroyed by those same 49ers in the first week of the season, it stood to reason that he wouldn't be great in this game, but, you know, this could be my suspicion is that this is a combination of, you know, the Baldwin's knee feeling better than we expected. So, yeah. You know, he was at one point kind of questionable going into this weekend, and then probably Russell Wilson gaining a step back too. So I think he's a good value in the mid 7,000s, a long story short, you know, in spite of that 1 week off, basically.
In another sort of just like wide receiver targets question, let me give you the target percentages for this player. See if you can guess who this is. Week one, he gets 23% of the targets. Week two, he gets 17% of the targets. And week three, he gets 1.6% of the targets. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Oh, that's an interesting one. Let me think for a second. AJ Green, is that one?
No, Kelvin Benjamin. Kelvin Benjamin gets one target last week against Minnesota.
That's less than I expected, Doug. I don't know my team.
I had him for significantly more targets going into that game.
Now, I had my AJ Green games mixed up, by the way. Yeah, he had 11 targets last week. That's not a good one either.
Yeah, no. So anyway, AJ Green's a really great play coming into this week, which we'll get to on our picks.
I was thinking the previous week, just 2 catches against Pittsburgh.
For sure. So the coach comes out and says it's his fault that Benjamin wasn't more involved. I mean, I get that to me strikes me as a little bit of like coach speak in terms of maybe there's something else going on and you just don't want to like kill a guy's confidence for whatever reason. You know, Cam did get hurt during the game. He came back in. The Minnesota is a good defense, so I'm not totally like, so they're a very good defense actually.
Yeah,
so
Minnesota's been crushing.
Right. But Benjamin, I mean, you just will not see this from wide receiver one, any of them. Okay. Like you'll never just see a one target game when your quarterback's throwing like 30 passes. What do we make of the Kelvin Benjamin thing here?
Well, it's interesting because it shuts the door on him being in that wide receiver one, like the guy you just jam in there, regardless of matchup sort of thing. And for this week, he has a great matchup with the Falcons. Now, the Falcons, I wonder if on some level they're a little bit of an overrated matchup at this point. If you look at the way wide receiver ones have performed against them this season, it doesn't exactly paint a picture of just a guy you want to play. You know, you don't just want to play the wide receiver one against them every week. So right now, Brandon Cooks, Amari Cooper, and Mike Evans all had their lowest target games of the season against the Falcons. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. It could mean better matchups at other cornerback positions. But like, you know, Evans in particular, just 7 targets and then 17 and 13 in the other two games. Cooper, I think, ties for his lowest targets at 9. And then Brandon Cooks obviously totally disappeared. So I think that, yeah, I'm not... You can't just windmill slam Kelvin Benjamin home in this game and feel fantastic about it. And I think the matchup is not as good as people perceive it to be.
It's games like this that are always very difficult in terms of projecting outward, right? So, like, we had Kelvin Benjamin at 9.5 targets right in that range going into last game.
You were wrong.
A little high. But the thing is now, I get worried about making just drastic calls based on one game also. Like, I'm tempted to just keep the targets sort of in the same range and, like, in that 9 to 9.5 category because I think when we look at the game log for the whole season, my guess is this one is the total outlier. Like, I just have a feeling.
Yeah, no question about that.
The question then becomes how much of an outlier? Like, is it like every other game from now on he's a 10 target guy? Or is there just something else going on with him and now there's just like maybe like half step separation? Because, yeah, I don't know. It's scary to the point where I don't want to keep him in like that Marvin Jones category of targets, like that 9 to 9.5 range, because that's just
you can't. I mean, given that he is coming off of a missed season due to injury and going down to one target, I mean, that's the type of thing we would see. Frankly, it reminds me of Calvin Johnson. You know, when Calvin Johnson came back and he would go out there and play and he would have 2 targets and people would make excuses and like he would say, I got to get more involved, whatever. But like, you know, I think that all these guys, the game plays so fast that people are pretty much just operating on muscle memory. And Cam is probably checking in on Benjamin and he's just not there. You know, it's right. Just, oh, that's not there. Move on to the next read. And I'd be very, very concerned. I don't think there's any way we can project him for the same number of targets as Marvin Jones. I think it's probably got to be more in like the 8 range. And we might be unhappy with that at the end of the week. I think that, you know, it reminds me of baseball where oftentimes we say don't make too much out of a small sample size, but if a pitcher goes out there and walks 8 guys in 3 innings, like that's not normal. That's not within the normal expectation of variation. And that's how this feels to me, especially given the game script ought to have favored Benjamin's skill set. Like, you know, Carolina had every reason to try to be getting the ball downfield and moving the chains more quickly. So I'm pretty concerned. And 7,700, you know, that's not cheap anymore, right? Like, that makes him the 10th most expensive wide receiver on FanDuel. So I don't think you're going to be happy allocating that kind of money for a guy who just had 1 target and no receptions.
No, I think I'm with you. It's significantly scary. It wouldn't be surprised. Like, I would still probably consider him to be some kind of a tournament play going into this week. But
a great, phenomenal GPP play, I think, just because no one's going to play the guy.
Right. So anyway, a couple interesting things. Do you have anything else before we kind of get out of here? Actually, I have one more thing before we do. This is good producing here, is when you just like ask questions and then answer them on the thing. This week, well, a couple of interesting just scheduling notes. Just keep it for those of you that are just checking into football for week 4. We have an interesting Thursday game with Cincinnati and Miami, but then Indianapolis and Jacksonville are playing in London at 9:30 on Sunday morning. Right, I hate this because one, that Indy game, like that Indy team, is actually a really pretty good DFS play.
And it just makes it a full day work for us on Sunday. We don't even get the morning tour.
I didn't even think about that part. Shoot. So Indy has to go into Jacksonville, but then you have like this whole like travel piece with it, and like I haven't like looked too much into what happens with teams when they just travel for, you know, many more hours than they ever would have into a totally different time zone, play a game at a totally different time than they've ever played before. I think one thing we'll have to look into is like maybe just how much that, because that's a real thing. That much travel and just like that much difference in what you're used to doing seems to me like it would be a real thing. And I suspect we're just not able to figure it out totally because the sample size is too small. So anyway, just a little thing to just disrupt the normal ebb and flow of NFL going into week four.
Yeah, that's a good point. I do think that this is going to be an interesting week, unlike I think interesting too much on this podcast, so drink every time like, I say the word interesting.
You're like Trump. But, you have like four words that you say. Yeah.
Tremendous. This is tremendous, believe me. We got Andrew Luck, this guy. But I think going into this week, a lot of the prices have, you know, the prices have gotten even stricter. It's going to be tougher to find value this week. That's going to make it more likely probably that you are going to have to find value with guys like Jordan Howard, Terrell Pryor on DraftKings. So just really keep a firm eye on this. You know, football is one of the more interesting DFS sports because the more information is probably as or more powerful than any of the other sports because things change so dramatically from year to year. Like there's no other sport where like there will be no basketball equivalent of the Eagles on the after the third game of the season this year, right? Like where you're like the Lakers really stink on D. Well, they're not going to beat the Cavaliers by the equivalent of 31 points this year, right? Like that's right. Not going to happen. So we keep learning new stuff. You know, use this year's information, but don't get married to it if it's statistically tough. But this is the exciting time of year. I think this is the time of year where we wind up making the most money because there's so much information and people are using it imperfectly. So I'm pumped to continue to wade through the info going into week four.
All right. We are from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head over to the site now. There you can sign up for our projection system powered by Lineup Lab that helps you calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Had a great amount of success with those this season so far. $29.95 a month has you covered. That will also cover the rest of baseball season. It will cover NHL, which starts next week, and then it will cover NBA, which starts at the end of the month. So if you were to sign up now or in the next couple days, you would be able to start the NBA season as well under that blanket. Like I said, $29.95 a month after that. Head on over, grab it. You're all good to go, buddy. I'll talk to you again on Wednesday when we roll through our picks for the week.
It's going to be amazing, man. I cannot wait.
Can't wait.